Last December, an otherwise healthy 37-year-old bank manager had neck surgery for herniated discs at Lenox Hill Hospital. In addition to bills from the hospital, the surgeon and the anesthesiologist, he received a $117,000 bill from an assistant surgeon who was not on the patient's insurance network and who the patient had never met. Elizabeth Rosenthal's recent article, After Surgery, Surprise $117,000 Medical Bill from Doctor He Didn't Know, details the increasingly common practice of surprise medical charges. It appeared in the September 20th issue of the New York Times and is part of her series called Paying Till It Hurts that examines the high cost of health care from stitches to ambulance rides. I'm very pleased that it has brought Elizabeth Rosenthal back to our show. And we also invite you, our listeners, to join the conversation. You can give us a call at 212-433-9692. Leave a question on our show page at WNYC.org or join us on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Can you give us the pertinent details of Peter Dreyer's surgery? And is it routine for a surgeon to need an assistant during that kind of operation?
Sure. Peter Dreyer had a very common problem. He had a ruptured disc or a herniated disc in his neck, and he, by most definitions, needed back surgery. So it was necessary surgery in that sense.
Because often it turns out, studies have indicated, that herniated discs don't always require back surgery, even though it's often prescribed in this country a lot more
right.
than elsewhere.
We overuse back surgery in this country. But I think Peter pretty clearly fell into a category of people who would benefit. He had severe pain. He had neurologic symptoms in his arm. He waited a few weeks. And he is a great patient. Like most patients in my series, he's a kind of tech person. He researched the doctor. He researched the surgery. He waited a while and thought, okay, I need this. And he went ahead and had his surgery just before Christmas. And he thought he'd researched everything, except then, lo and behold, the surgery is a great success. He goes home and he starts getting this huge bill from a doctor he's never heard of before. And so he thought, wait a second. I did my homework. So what's a patient to do?
And he had the primary surgeon had accepted a negotiated fee. How much did the surgeon get paid for the operation compared to how much the assistant was charging?
The primary surgeon, who Peter liked, I feel like I have to say, and felt was somewhat underpaid, ended up getting about $6,000 for the surgery, a combination of an insurance payment and Peter's copay. The assistant surgeon, who Peter had never met, and I suppose you could say doesn't know if he liked or not because he'd never met him, billed and received $117,000. And that was when Peter contacted me because he was pretty outraged by that disparity and getting this huge bill when he tried to be a good patient.
Doesn't a patient assume that a hospital that's part of his or her insurance network will provide in-network doctors' labs and x-rays?
Well, I think this is the reason I was passionate about doing this particular story, because logically you would assume, okay, I make the effort to go to an in-network hospital. The basic treatment in that hospital should be in-network. Now, there has always been a kind of disparity between in-network hospitals, and maybe your primary surgeon would be out of network, but he or she would probably tell you that, and you would know that.
And then you could negotiate
a fee and work with your insurer and get pre-approval, as Peter did. I think what we're seeing more and more, though, and this became the subject of a follow-up piece, is really the kind of nuts and bolts of the hospital being out of network. For example, to me, the most disturbing is an in-network emergency room with out-of-network emergency doctors. As one patient said in the follow-up story, wait, I thought the doctor came with the emergency room.
And we assumed that the nurse, the physician assistant, would also come with it. They'd be employed by the hospital.
Well, this is a surgery that often requires two sets of trained hands. So you could argue, I don't think anyone says, oh, a surgeon should do this by him or herself. In many teaching hospitals, that second set of hands would be a resident. It could be a physician assistant or a surgical assistant. The question in this case comes, why do you call in another fully trained surgeon? And if you're going to call in another fully trained surgeon, Shouldn't the patient be notified? And shouldn't you make sure it's someone in the insurance network so the patient isn't hit with this surprise fee? I called it in the, and others have called it too, drive-by doctoring, because here's this doctoring that you didn't know was even happening. I mean, Peter was out cold. How could he know?
Elizabeth Rosenthal's latest article on the high cost of medicine in this country is After Surgery, Surprise, $170,000 Medical Bill from Doctor He Didn't Know. It was in the New York Times on September 20th. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Mr. Dreyer had other problems on the day of his surgery. When did he learn that the company supplying essential monitoring during the operation didn't accept his life insurance? His medical insurance.
His health insurance. Well, this is a common problem that we've heard of from other patients, too. During neurological surgery, you need neurological monitoring. It's just kind of obvious why that would be useful. But many of the neuromonitoring companies are contracted out by the hospital. So many of them are not in network. So in Peter's case, as he was being prepared for surgery, someone came to him with a consent form that said, you know, we regret to inform you that your insurance doesn't cover our services. We're not in network, so you agree to pay out of pocket. And he was pissed about this, because he's already kind of dressed and a little doped up for surgery, and suddenly you learn your monitoring is out of network and you're going to pay. What are you supposed to do? Say, oh, I'll do the surgery without monitoring? I mean, that's not a real choice. Other patients, I should say, didn't even learn about this charge until after the surgery. So they didn't even get a consent form. And Peter, to his credit and to show you what a great patient he is, as he was being prepared for surgery, when they told him this, he said, I'm not signing this form. You know, I want a better rate. And he actually negotiated down the rate on the way to the OR.
While he's on the gurney.
Right. I mean, I very few patients would or should have to do that.
And prior to the surgery, he was required to have an echocardiogram, even though he had no cardiac history. Doesn't the American Society of Echocardiography discourage such testing for patients with no heart problems?
Yes. You know, there's a campaign that many doctors' groups are involved in called Choosing Wisely, where they were asking different specialty societies to say, what should be eliminated that we often do? And one of the things on the list from the American Society of Echocardiography is pre-op echoes for people who have no cardiac problems. And part of the reason I want to do this story is because I think a lot of people who are scheduled for surgery will be told, oh, you need an echo. And I think patients need to say, okay, why do I need this? Is this because I need it or because someone's trying to make money? This was billed at, I think, $950. That's good money if you're echoing every person who goes into your OR.
Is the hospital the responsible party here? The doctor who agreed to do the surgery? Would he have gotten something better if he had just simply gone to another hospital?
No, I think,
isn't it responsibility of the hospital to say to you in advance, okay, we're on your medical plan, but there are some other people who will be involved who will cost you a bit more?
Well, you know, when you go into a hospital, often in that pile of forms you sign, there's a little thing you initial saying, I understand that some of my providers may be out of network. And I think what I've seen in response to this article is a lot of finger pointing, where the hospitals say, oh, the insurers should do this for you. The insurers say it's the hospital's fault. The hospitals say it's the doctor who's responsible. And what bothers me most in this particular article is the patients are caught in the middle of this kind of tug of war over their care, and they're the ones who are often stuck with these alarming bills.
Are people ever able to convince the insurance company to cover something that they wouldn't have covered normally?
Yeah, and I mean, in Peter's case, he did. You know, he called his insurer and said, look, I've never heard of this guy. I didn't consent to this. I'm not paying. And his insurer said, with Blue Cross Blue Shield, said, you're right. And then they cut a check to the doctor for the full amount.
For $117,000?
Yes, and that bothered him too, because he was hoping his insurer, as many people are, would bargain on his behalf, you know, a reasonable rate. That's what he kept saying to me. I want a reasonable rate for the surgeon, a reasonable rate for the assistant, and then I want to take the rest of that check and send it back to the employees of my company so their premiums don't go up next year.
Well, he is a very well-informed and well-prepared patient. If he couldn't succeed at understanding all the aspects of his medical care, what hope is there for the rest of us, people like me who rarely read the fine print, just assume that everything's going to be taken care of because I trust my doctor?
Well, my hope is that by publicizing these kinds of cases, we get more proactive legislation and a little more what I would call responsible healthcare from the physicians and the insurers and the hospitals, who should be negotiating among themselves. It really shouldn't be left to the patient. And I think, you know, the thing I think people should remember is, unfortunately, in the system, you have to be your own advocate, and it's really hard to do so. So, and I've had many people, you know, when they complain, sometimes your insurance says, okay, we'll take care of it, and then pays the doctor the full amount. That upsets people just as much right now. Maybe not just as much, but it's still, it's why all of our premiums go up.
Well, if you have a few days before the surgery, as Mr. Dreyer did,
yeah,
should you be calling the hospital and saying, give me a list of all the people who are going to be in that room and how much and whether they're all on my plan? Should you be calling the insurance company? And anyone who's tried to call hospitals and insurance companies know that you could be on the phone for 2 days before you find out anything.
Well,
before you even speak to a human being.
Yes, and I think that this is really a lot to ask of someone as they're suffering from severe back pain. I think one thing that people can do, and I will do after reporting this story, if you're having surgery, say to the primary surgeon, is there going to be an assistant called in? Is that person going to be in network? If your doctor says, we need labs, okay, is the lab in my network? I think we all, unfortunately, in times of medical crisis, have to start asking many more questions. If you go to an emergency room, think about what you're signing, and also say, okay, are the doctors here in the emergency room? I know at my local emergency room here in New York City, the doctors are now out of network. I won't go there anymore.
But in an emergency room, often you're in real pain.
Right.
Thinking clearly is one of the last things you can expect from yourself.
Well, this is why people may want to do a little bit of advanced extra homework now, because I think the assumption has long been, oh, I know the in-network ERs in my neighborhood. Maybe you should call them and say, okay, are your doctors also in network? Now, it's sad to have to do that, and I hope there will be ultimately a kind of legislative solution or an insurance-based solution where insurers say, you know what, if you want to be in network, you have to make sure your doctors are in network, your radiology is in network, that in network means something that consumers can use.
My guest is Elizabeth Rosenthal. Her latest article in her series, Pain Till It Hurts, for the New York Times is After Surgery Surprise, $117,000 medical bill from doctor he didn't know. It was in the September 20th issue of the New York Times. We'll take a little break, and when we come back, we'll talk about this subject a bit more and take your calls. Our number here is 212-433-9692. You can also write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. And we are back with Elizabeth Rosenthal, who has been writing a series for the New York Times called Paying Till It Hurts. The most recent one, After Surgery Surprise, $117,000 medical bill from doctor he didn't know. It was in the September 20th New York Times. Did you know that the series was going to go on as long as it did?
No, it initially was supposed to last a year, and it would have ended several months ago. But this series has been wonderful and organic in that we keep hearing new problems from patients, and so we keep extending the series as long as we feel we have something useful to say. And this particular one, I think, to me, every consumer should have their antenna up for these kind of surprise medical charges.
And you often get a lot of response from readers.
Yeah.
And some of them are doctors who object. Have doctors objected to this article?
Well, I was...
I would think it would be hard to.
Well, I was gratified, and I have been gratified, that we've gotten a lot of response from doctors being supportive. Because, you know, the truth is, when someone does this kind of billing, it hurts all physicians. It hurts their image. It's not, you know, it's not good for the doctors who are working really hard out there, doing their best to deliver good care at reasonable prices. So I think it's been a, you know, a mixed reaction for doctors. And I think for every part of our healthcare system, whatever comes next in healthcare reform is going to involve some pain and change, and that's not easy.
Let's take a call from Art. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how you doing? I had a very similar situation a few years back where I had came back from Mexico and they came very ill. They thought it was my appendix, and I went to the emergency room, hospital I'd been to before, and then got an astronomical bill about 6 weeks later. And they told me same thing. They took my insurance, but my doctor providing the care did not take my insurance. And I was fortunate enough that my mother works as an insurance biller. So she actually was able to call on my behalf and basically got the hospital, found out that there's some forms and paperwork that the hospital never had me sign. So it was basically a technicality that, you know, the hospital ended up agreeing not to pay the money, or not for me to have to pay. But at the end of the day, I learned my lesson, and very similar situation. I ask this question all the time. But the benefits I see that happen now is with the fast, short-term care from, like, some of the primary care providers in, like, the outer boroughs and stuff will now not have emergency rooms, but they'll have the, you know, the minute clinic-type places. But they tend to take your insurance as opposed to emergency rooms. So I find I'll bring my family to one of those places as opposed to an emergency room.
I should say there are protections for emergency care in some states, which say that if you are if it's emergency care, that your insurer will reimburse the hospital for the in-network rates, even if the provider is out of network. What's troubling is that we see many patients are then billed for the difference, and hospitals try, or provider groups try, to hold them responsible. And often you can push back, which I think is an interesting lesson. But, you know, in your case, you have a relative who's an insurance biller. You know,
lucky you.
I mean, the average patient doesn't have a lot of force on their side in fighting back. And I've seen people, I mean, I've seen some amusing solutions. I've seen some people say, fine, this bill seems unreasonable. I'm going to set up a $5 a month payment plan for life. So, you know, but it is hard. But I would encourage patients to question and to call and not just say, okay, here's the check.
Here's a call from Tiff from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Unlike your previous callers, I don't have insurance. But about a month ago, I was spending a lot of time helping a family member heal from a surgery in Mount Sinai Hospital. And while I was there, I got shingles. And I self-diagnosed myself on the internet, on WebMD, with, you know, pictures and information. I knew there wasn't really much I could do, but I was in a lot of pain. So I went down to triage, and I said, can you prescribe? I'm pretty sure I have shingles. Here it is. Look at it. Can you just prescribe me some pain medication to deal with it, and it should run its course? It was a visual confirmation. He literally just looked at it. The doctor was like, yep, that's shingles. Here's a prescription for Percocet. And then they sent me a $1,700 bill.
By the way, have you heard about a thing called Obamacare?
I am currently about to get on Obamacare, and I've been trying to work it out. I have my own business, and I have, like, tax problems because my last company folded that I worked for, and I've been trying to resolve sort of my financial paperwork to be able to apply for Obamacare properly.
But this is not unusual. A doctor looks at something 10 seconds, and then you get a bill, and you wonder what would have happened if it had been 15 seconds.
Yeah.
I mean, I literally spent probably like 60 seconds in the room with him, and he was very busy. And I was like, there's nothing I can do, right? That's why I saw him like on the internet. And he's like, yep, it's your new friend. And I was like, kind of like a little teed off that he said it so callously. And then they sent me a $1,700 bill for a 60-second visual confirmation of now, something I already diagnosed.
Now, a doctor told me that the reason that those fees are often so high is because within the hospital, that might be a $50 charge or something like that. But if you go to the insurance company, you wind up with $5 for it. So they come up with a much higher fee, assuming that when the insurance company gets involved, you'll get something reasonable.
Well, that's what you hear from a lot of physicians and hospitals. I think that leaves people without good insurance in a very, very, very vulnerable position. You know, my daughter, one of my children, had a $32,000 ER bill that my insurer paid $1,100 for. If I didn't have an insurer with, these were in-network rates, what would have happened to me in that case? You know, I think ER charge bills are, you know, they are really eye-popping. And
The ER say that's because they are also the doctor of last resort for people who have no insurance.
That's partly true. It's also true that ERs are profit centers for most hospitals. So, you know, I think we could all use some rational billing, you know, prices that are more accurate and reflect the actual cost they expect to get paid. And then, you know, maybe we could all be better consumers. But it's really hard when you get a bill for $1,700 for 5 seconds to think.
Meanwhile, she has to pay it.
Yeah, and well, I'm curious. Our caller didn't say what happened in the end.
What happened?
Well, I'm still working on trying to resolve it, but I can't think of any other industry where you go in and they can't even tell you beforehand even what you're going to pay.
Right, and I think
it's pretty unfair.
Yeah, and if someone said as you walk in the door, caution, you know, this 5 second visit may cost you $2,000, you would walk away and find someplace else. And I'm still waiting. Someone commented to me, I'm waiting from some hospital to post a billboard outside saying, our charges are transparent and there will be no surprise charges, because I think a lot of patients would go there.
Eric from Brooklyn writes, if physicians call in colleagues, is there any sense of whether the doctors are wanting to split fees?
Well, the insurers will tell you that that's a not uncommon practice. It's very difficult to know that in any individual case. There are some cases that have been litigated in Long Island about where a primary surgeon is always in-network, and he always calls in the same out-of-network surgeon and bills very, very high rates. And they presumably have been splitting the fees. And why do the insurers think that? Because the two surgeons have the same address.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's very hard to prove. But I think you have to wonder if someone is being paid very little and calling an assistant who's being paid a lot, what's going on with the money?
Patrice from Franklin Square. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I feel that this is important because I learned the hard way. I have informed my family as well of this situation where I had gone into a doctor's office and, of course, I had been able to read all their forms. What I do now, in the future, it's for everybody to really think about. When you sign all the papers that are given to you either in the hospital or in the doctor's offices, underneath your signature and then put a block over it, I will only be seen by in-network doctors. That is it. I won a $2,500 case from my insurance company because I wrote that. And now my mom has dementia, and every single form that I write for her, I write that specifically. She will only be seen by in-network doctors, either in hospitals
and
or
that
doctors.
Gives legal protection? Do you know, Elizabeth?
I don't know if it gives actual legal protection, but it gives you a way to fight back. And what we see again is that patients who have a grounds to fight back can often be at least partially successful. And I've heard from other people who've told me on the consent forms, they write that as well. Now, I think the problem you're going to find is it's this whole game that hospitals and providers play, where some hospitals will say, we don't have any radiologists in network. So then what? Are you not going to get an X-ray? You can get stuck. But at least that gives you an argument for saying they were out of network, but I'm paying in-network fees.
You wrote about a 6-year-old who cut his chin in a playground in New Jersey.
Yeah.
And that wound up costing his insured parents nearly $5,000 out of pocket.
Well, they refused to pay it. But yes, I mean, you know, and this again is something to think about. They went into an emergency room, and I've heard this from several patients. The triage nurse may say, oh, do you want to see a plastic surgeon? Now, that line to me now should set off the bells and whistles of, wow, this is going to get really expensive and my insurance
won't cover
it.
He's going to have a big scar for the rest of his life otherwise.
Well, you know, often, and I think often in American health care we have this because we haven't been paying. Oh, why not? You know, why don't we just call in a plastic surgeon? I think if someone said to you, you know what, this is a cut on your kid's chin and, you know, it's going to cost $5,000 for a plastic surgeon, you would probably go, eh. I don't know that if it was on the front of his face maybe, but maybe not there. So I think, again, you know, but I would say it should be maybe at the hospital's responsibility to say, would you like us to call a plastic surgeon, but you realize you're going to have to pay for that out of pocket.
Isn't there a new New York State law that'll take effect next year?
Yeah.
Will that give the patient more protection?
It will definitely give the patient more protection because basically what it says is that you can't be billed more than your in-network fees for out-of-network emergency care or care that you had no consent for. It also requires to a greater degree providers to provide information about whether they're in-network or out-of-network. I'm waiting to see how that plays out in reality, though. Are they going to tell you how much they're billing exactly or just, oh, I'm out-of-network? It won't be that much. And will hospitals still try, will your insurer be paying those big sums? Because if that's the case, then, you know, our premiums will go up anyway. It doesn't, you know, it's nice not to have to pay out of pocket, but it's also bad to have your premium go up 10% next year.
Isn't there a Facebook group for readers of your articles? And you had an e-book the last time you were here. We talked about that. Does this get added to the e-book?
Yes, this will get added to the ebook. I'm not sure if it's in a part of it right now. And we have started a Facebook group because we've discovered that so many people want to talk about this, both professionals. We've gotten a lot of hospital executives, doctors, patients in this group. I'm actually leaving here and we're doing a Facebook chat today about this topic as well. So I encourage anyone who wants to talk more about this to join.
Are there advocate groups that are defending patients?
There are, and they're trying really hard. But, you know, we need a little more help, I think, from our legislators on this. We need legal protection. We need attorney generals to be litigating more of these cases. They're starting to. But, you know, in the meantime, a $117,000 bill is a pretty scary thing to see.
The last time you were here on the show, you talked about why the cost of vaccines is soaring. There seems to be no end to future topics. Do you know what your next one is going to be?
No, not yet. You know, I always say a New York Times series is a little bit like a dinner party. You have to know when it's the right time to leave and let the momentum go where it will. But I think this topic and part of the reason the Facebook group will certainly continue this for a long time, I hope. And I hope it will build momentum for patients to get more involved and for legislators to start responding to patient needs.
It'll also inspire people like Mr. Dreyer to write to you and suggest another article.
Yes. I always welcome those.
This article, part of the Paying Till It Hurts series by Elizabeth Rosenthal, was called After Surgery, Surprised $117,000 Medical Bill from Doctor He Didn't Know. It was in the New York Times on September 20th. Elizabeth, it's always a pleasure to have you here, even though you tell such scary stories.
So depressing, I know. Thanks.
On tomorrow's show, Quincy Jones and blind piano prodigy Justin Coughlin discuss their relationship with the jazz legend Clark Terry, the subject of a new documentary called Keep On Keepin' On. And then Tom Stoppard talks about his play Indian Ink, along with Tony and Golden Globe Award winner Rosemary Harris, who stars in it. Filmmaker David Cronenberg tells us about writing his first novel. It's called Consumed. The Leonard Lopez Show is produced by Stephen Valentino, Julia Corcoran, and Andre Sahara Plotnick. Melissa Egan's the executive producer. Debbie Doherty was at the audio controls, and we had help today from Nick Hose, Hugh Sansom, Deborah Freeman, and Catherine Millsop. I'm Leonard Lopez, your host. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow.